afternoon and welcome to Garden Planet. You're with Karen and Selena.
Welcome, welcome.
Hey guys, I just wanted to apologize in advance. I promised you I wasn't going to get all technical in the next session.
Uh-oh.
Turns out that composting, which is today's topic, is actually quite technical. And I actually wanted to talk about a number of things, and Selena, I'm sure you would have things to say, re-composting.
I might have to stop you.
Yeah. But no, I've only just started. No, come on. Because I wanted to talk about a little bit about the science behind it, because it is actually a science.
No, I want to find out.
Yeah. I think it'll be a bit better than the atmospheric thing I was trying to go with last week with the frost
heat.
And the latent heat and all that. So it's all good. It's getting better. But and I also wanted to talk about Compost Collective, which is an organisation.
Yes.
And I also wanted to talk about compost trenching. But I think we're going to have to talk about Compost Collective and compost trenching part two, another session, so we can actually really get into that. Because I think that we touched on what to do with all our extra food scraps and extra food, edible food as well last week. How can we, and that's one such way.
All right.
Oh, just on that note, I noticed while I was doing my research in Massachusetts. It's a state in the States, USA.
Yes.
They, in 2014, that state actually passed a law whereby if you had an organisation or a place of significant, you know, size, like a school perhaps, something like that,
mm-hmm.
and you had X amount of food scraps, by law, you had to send them, you couldn't just biff them, to a composting plant. So I thought, isn't that neat to hear? I don't know, that was 2014, I assume it's still going, but this is the kind of thinking we need. I think composting is going to, one of the ways we're going to save our planet.
Yeah, think about all the restaurants and the food
places like that where it's actually a law. You have X amount of food coming in, therefore you would have, you know, a certain amount coming out. They'd be audited and everything probably to
whole zero waste thing.
We don't seem to have anything. I don't know. We need to look into it. But today, guys, we're just going to talk about the actual ins and outs of composting. And Selena, what are you going to talk about?
Well, I will just touch on whatever you bring up to add, because you're going all scientific on me. But I thought I would talk about some tools, seeing as it's winter and it's that time of year, just to have a inventory of what kind of tools we need to have for the preparing things.
I did suggest as the plant of the week that to Selena that she could talk about maybe something that likes to grow in compost. Like I often find little things on the top just self-sprouting. And she had the great idea of mushrooms because she's been growing mushrooms. But
my mushroom growing was a bit of a failure.
It didn't quite. Maybe keep trying with that one. You never know. So compost is a noun and a verb. The noun being a mixture of various decaying organic substances which enhance their suitability to the soil as a fertilising resource after undergoing composting. Okay? It's used as a fertiliser once it's the act of composting, which is the verb to compost something, happens. So I don't know there's lots of words that are nouns and verbs, isn't there? You're the librarian.
To compost and to...
So why is composting such a big deal?
Why?
It just feels right.
It just is.
Every plant consists of substances, both carbon and non-carbon, just like humans and animals.
Mm-hmm.
We wouldn't be an organism if we didn't have carbon as the main thing.
Okay.
And so for this reason, the topsoil needs to contain sufficient organic matter with which the plant roots and other various organisms in the soil food web, it's an interesting soil food web, can interact. Okay, so this is what results in healthy, happy plants, which is why every functioning garden has compost. Because basically the soil needs it.
Yes.
It's actually more about the soil than the plants.
It's more about the microorganisms in the soil.
Yeah, so we're going to get into that.
Okay.
Yes.
Yep.
You're onto it. You already know. There's actually three forms of composting. There's aerobic composting, which is what most gardeners would have. With aerobic composting, air is introduced to the pile to help break down materials quickly, which is why this type of compost needs to be turned regularly. Water is also added, but we don't want there to be free-flowing water in the pile, as this will inhibit the transfer of oxygen, which air, to the microorganisms. And this will promote anaerobic behaviour, which is not what you really want. Okay?
Okay.
Got to keep that air flow. So don't soak your compost too much. Macroorganisms and microorganisms. So there's macroorganisms involved as well. Do you know what a macroorganism is?
One that you can see.
Yes!
Oh, that was just a good guess.
That's me clapping. It is. It's like bugs and critters, basically. Yeah. A fancy word for that. Yeah. And micro are the organisms you can't see with the naked eye. Common compost macroorganisms include earthworms, centipedes, spiders and beetles, although there are some that you don't want in there, but I'm not going to go too much into that. They help break down the organic waste into smaller pieces, then the microorganisms come on, and then the microorganisms digest, and they will also chomp, the macroorganisms also chomp down other macroorganisms to keep all the population, uh-huh. So they feed on
each other,
okay. Each other as well. So there's lots going on. But interestingly, it is the microorganisms who carry out the majority of the decomp.
Like all the little bacterias.
The little guys are always doing the hard yakka, aren't they, Selena?
Of course.
Then you've got anaerobic composting. And this takes almost no effort at all, no turning, nothing. You just chuck your scraps into a compost pile and don't fuss with it for about a year.
That's my style.
That's kind of my style as well. But I've got a compost bin that has holes in the side and I use it regularly. So I'm constantly emptying it from the bottom. So I think in some kind of way I am turning it. And even if it's not fully decomposed, it will start, you know, continue that in the soil, but I've given it a bit of a head start. I'm not, yeah, that's
can
my
it be
kind of
half
style.
And half?
I think it can, and this is where it gets interesting.
Okay.
But with the anaerobic one, it gets quite smelly, apparently they were saying. Because you can get some nasty bacteria taking place, and yeah, they can start. This is what happens in a landfill, and it's why it often stinks,
like the way
it does. There's lots of methane gas.
Yep.
Being released into the environment. So that is what we call anaerobic composting.
Okay.
And then you've got another one called vermicomposting. Do you know what vermicomposting is?
Worms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they use worms, often red worms.
I've got
tiger worms.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oxygen and moisture to break down the organic material. So it's kind of like aerobic, but they've just honed in on the worms more than all the other critters. Yeah.
Yep.
Vermicomposting has a number of benefits. It produces little odour. There are, if any, anaerobic bacteria, and you don't need to turn it because the worms are doing all that for you, and it goes quite quickly. So the science of it, okay, so aerobic composting is similar to anaerobic digestion, which happens in our bodies.
Isn't that interesting? Aerobic composting is similar to anaerobic
digestion, which is basically how our guts perform with all their microbes.
Oh, I see.
It's got very, very similar science to it.
Might as well call it digestion.
So we're like walking compost bins, basically.
Right, okay.
And it probably explains why some of the smells are coming out of us.
Oh, right.
Because we're anaerobic, right? Makes sense, right?
I see.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? So the back to your question about, can you have different stages of composting happening? So at the bottom of your compost, you'll have a other things happening rather than the fresh stuff at the top. Yes, because there's three phases of composting.
Okay.
First one is called the mesophilic phase.
Oh.
A mesophile is an organism that grows best at moderate temperatures. So as opposed to a thermophilic organism, the bugs that like the heat. So it starts off with the bugs that like the not heat, like not 55 degrees or whatever the key temperature is. And this phase occurs within 2 to 3 days when you first put in your scraps, in which time there is large growth of organisms and a slight temperature rise. The thermophilic phase, the second phase, occurs over a week to a couple of months, and this has the most microbial activity, leading to higher temperatures of up to 55 degrees. This temperature is very beneficial as it leads to faster decomposition and the destruction of pathogens in the system. So if you might have some bad ones in there, that'll deal with that. It'll burn them, cook them. However, too much heat in a pile will be counteractive, so it helps to turn it. Have you seen pictures of compost heaps that look like they're on fire?
I have. I've seen steam coming off them.
It can get really hot. So, and then you can get in, and then you get into your third phase of composting, third and final, and this is the second mesophilic phase. So you're not so warm loving bugs start coming back into action.
Okay.
And some consider this the most important and active phase. This phase takes place over several months, during which the compost pile further breaks down into usable soil or organic matter. So that's probably why this is where it starts to. So you take so I think that is happening. But if you're looking at from top to bottom.
Oh, okay.
If you stuck your hand in your compost it is now, I have, and dug down there, it feels hotter as you
down.
Or,
okay. Yeah, I can believe
that. Well, maybe we need to maybe look into this.
Maybe there needs to be a compost cam.
Because that's what happens as the bugs and everything get to work. It does almost sink down into itself.
Well, it's amazing how much you can stuff into a compost
bin. I reckon.
And then by the end of that process, it's like a third of what it was.
It's unbelievable. It's beautiful. So that's it. So you know how compost needs carbon and nitrogen? There's this whole down at the garden, Nicole's
greens,
always going on about the carbon nitrogen ratio.
Yes.
It is crucial to good compost. The ideal ratio is carbon 25, nitrogen 1.
Okay.
Apparently research, it's been scientifically, apparently that's the key number.
4 times as much.
25 times as much.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. So anyway, so why is nitrogen so important?
I don't know.
I can tell you if you don't, but you can tell me if you do.
Please tell me.
Nitrogen is a crucial component of proteins, nucleic acids, amino acids, enzymes and coenzymes necessary for cell growth and function of all organisms, including the bugs in the soil, going full circle back to, as well as the plant roots going, oh, I need that, sucking that up.
Yeah.
That's why nitrogen fixing plants are so crucial.
Yeah.
Because without it, all those things that I just mentioned, nucleic acids, that's DNA and all that. So that's why. And then why carbon? Well, all living things contain carbon in some form. Carbon's molecular structure allows it to bond in many different ways with many different elements. The entire fundamentals of organic chemistry are based on the element of carbon. So it's like
essential.
It's the bee's knees.
It's the
primary component of macromolecules, including proteins, lipids, nucleic acids, and carbohydrates. So we are carbon.
Oh, what I don't understand is the whole big deal about carbon footprints. If we have so too much carbon, apparently carbon's bad to some.
Yeah, well, that's if it's in the wrong place, like the air. Where it should be in plants
and in the soil,
which brings me on to the next thing. Don't worry, I'm almost at the end.
Yeah.
Okay, so about the role of carbon. Mm. Christopher Johns, a research manager from the Northern Australia and Landcare Research Program in 2017, wrote a paper titled The Role of Carbon in Promoting Healthy Soils.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so good in soil, not so good as carbon dioxide or carbon monoxide, because then it becomes, it's a greenhouse gas.
Yeah.
So that's why it helps. I just took this quote right out of his thing because I couldn't put it any better way.
What does he say?
As an aside, Christopher says that soils have become one of the most vulnerable resources in the world because they don't have enough of what he calls soil organic carbon in them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Shortened as SOC. Soil organic carbon, and this is a direct quote from his report, is the main component of soil organic matter. As an indicator for soil health, soil organic carbon is important for its contribution to food production as mitigation and adaptation to climate change and the achievement of the sustainable development goals. So without, he believes that without this soil carbon, organic carbon, we won't be able to achieve any of those things.
Okay.
Okay. Moving back to what he wrote, a high soil organic matter content provides nutrients to plants and improves water availability, both of which enhance soil fertility and ultimately improve food productivity. Moreover, soil organic carbon improves soil structural stability by promoting aggregate formation, which together with the porosity ensure sufficient aeration and water infiltration to support plant growth. With an optimal amount of soil organic carbon, the water filtration capacity of the soil further supports the supply of clean water. That's an aside there, but crucial to the health of the earth.
Interesting.
Carbon.
If you look at the chemical makeup of carbon, how it's arranged.
Yes, it's got 8 stems coming off it.
So that, if you think of billions of those all over the place, that's great for water molecules to go through or attach to.
My organic chemistry is not great, but yeah, I think it's something to do with that, with the way the carbon molecule bonds with those. Mm. Yeah, you'll notice that charcoal is a vital.
Yes. The way I picture it
is, like if you've been poisoned,
yes,
they give you charcoal, which is, I think, pure carbon, because it can sequester all those things very easily to it.
Yeah. The way I think of it is like a big sponge.
Yeah.
So carbon in the soil, like a big sponge, can absorb a lot of water, nutrients, instead of like a brick.
If you take soil of poor quality, have you seen poor quality soil before?
It's dust.
It's just dusty. There's nothing to it. It's quite flaky, isn't it?
Oh,
and
it's rock
it's
hard.
Just got nothing.
Roots
yeah.
can't get in it. It's nothing to grab onto.
Yeah, yeah. And I think even clay soil, which has got lots of nutrients in it, lacks carbon, I believe.
It needs.
So without that carbon, getting access to those nutrients, although it's great, it still needs to be broken down at some point.
That's why a lot of people add lime or gypsum to get the, what do you call it, porosity or pumice for.
And what is in lime? Calcium carbonate. And there is a carbonate. Right there. So that,
exactly.
Yeah. I mean, that's getting into pretty,
That might have to be another episode.
But I don't want to. So there you go, guys.
Carbon.
That's the science behind it. And that's why the carbon to nitrogen ratio is often, you don't want to put too much carbon in because that slows down your composting rate.
Okay.
So that's that.
Explain what types of things are carbon for our gardeners who are going, what?
Yeah. okay, let's do that. And I've got, have you got?
Yep. So the way I think of it is greens are generally nitrogenous. And browns are usually carboniferous. So browning meaning like woody, papery, cardboardy.
Like think brown,
dried.
Bark, carbon. That's how I think of it.
Yeah.
But not necessarily, they don't have to be brown in colour.
No. it's just got to be sort of dried out, maybe.
Yeah, just think wood.
Or straw.
Leaves, pine needles, cardboard, wood chips. Woody wood.
Yep. Or even hair.
Oh, hair.
Yep.
Hair feels pretty bristly at the best of times.
And vacuum dust clippings and things.
Yeah.
That is brown. You might think coffee grounds.
What if you have grey hair?
Are brown.
Is that allowed?
Oh, sorry. You might think coffee grounds are brown, but they're not. They're classed as a green.
Yeah.
Because they have that moisture.
Coffee grounds, so your nitrogen-rich, I try not even to say browns and greens. It just gets confusing for some people.
Oh, okay.
But nitrogen-rich is your garden waste, hay, food waste, coffee grounds, grass clippings.
And even weeds, but without the seed heads.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So basically your carbon-rich substances, they've still got nitrogen in them. They've just got a high proportion of carbon. Mm. Don't think it's all pure. Yeah. And then your nitrogen-rich have a higher proportion of nitrogen or something like that.
How, with your compost, Karen, how do you go with your carbon, as in, like, do you use a lot of newspaper or cardboard? Do you soak it or...?
I have, since studying
paper
compost,
shredding,
which is just quietly one of my favourite things in the world, I have started putting a lot more carbon stuff in. So all the packaging I get when you order stuff and they put in heaps of paper and...
Toilet paper.
I'm putting in, heaps of handy towels, like I'm using tissues all the time, rather than, like, like a cloth.
Yeah.
Well, I know, but a lot of the cloths you get are made out of plastic.
Oh,
I know, even wipes. So it's like, I'm a big fan of handy towels now, because it's like,
towels.
And ideally, handy towels that have not been bleached.
Yes, brown.
Yeah, yeah. So we've only got about 7 minutes remaining, Selena. Did you have any other questions regards...
Okay.
Compost. Because I was going to leave it at that because my brain's hurting. But
okay.
It's not that heavy a topic.
No,
it's not like the atmosphere. It's I can get my head around this biology a lot easier than,
Going on to maybe a bit about the mechanics of composting, there's sort of three different types that I found might be useful for us gardeners in building our compost heaps. So, there was shallow pit composting where you dig like a shallow pit and then you throw everything in so you don't even need to
build. That's what
trench composting is.
Yeah, that's a big, getting really big in UK where they have smaller gardens and they just, and it's great.
It might take a bit of work digging out the pit though, so I don't know.
I stayed with a guy that does it and I checked out his garden. It was amazing. He basically, you know how we use a compost bin, all he'd do is just go into the garden next to his potato patch or whatever, wherever he wanted, and just dig a hole and chuck it in. And he had a kind of system where he knew where it was going and where it was going to end, and he had the next one sort of planned out.
Does he cover it roughly anything?
Just cover it with soil so you wouldn't get rabbits and, critters.
So it works for you, then try that.
It takes a bit of time, though. I mean, some people don't want to go digging holes every time.
The other is like having your three-bay sort of like pellets or little boxes.
Yeah. So you have your fresh produce in the first.
Yeah. And then already broken down. And then your finished compost at the end. So you're constantly turning it by putting it
in. So the second ones, when do you think is a good time to start emptying out the first, like the freshest compost? I wonder if that's like the three phases of the composting.
I suppose when you have a big heap and it breaks down, when it gets to like a third of what it was, the level of what it was, then maybe you can start moving it along.
I kind of just do it as I don't do this in my yard because I don't have room for three separate, but at the community garden it's kind of just as we empty the end one and space becomes available.
Yes. Yeah, and then, we'll move it along.
Yeah.
So I think...
I'm going to talk to Nicole about those three phases on
that
Saturday.
That keeps it manageable for...
that makes a lot of sense.
Okay, so you can do that. So
and what's the other one?
Your bays next to each other. The other one is having those plastic bins that are empty at the bottom. You just stick it on top and it's the... most of the time it's usually black plastic, so it's covered and it doesn't get, like, any outside critters trying to dig it up.
Yeah.
So it's kind of manageable if you're in, a town garden and you just want something tidy. And when it comes to turning it, you would just leave it for a couple of months to sit. It'll break down and then you kind of have to scrape it at the bottom. But that tends to work. Or maybe you could have... a couple of them, maybe three of them.
Yeah, yeah. My mum just used to have like a big heap. We would just chuck everything in there. And or maybe a couple, but I just remember this big heap and she was a really good gardener, or is.
Yeah.
And everything would just go on this heap and I think if she needed organic matter, she'd just get the spade in the bottom of it and get the wheelbarrow and just go from the bottom.
The thing with plastic is it's just easy to lift, I suppose, if you wanted to lift off your... thing and see your
she
heat.
Didn't even have a lid.
Okay.
It was all just exposed. Hey. Nothing. I mean, the only thing I'd be most concerned about rats, but then rats can get into a compost bin. They do.
If you are composting and it's a bit exposed, just cover it with a tarp or something.
Oh, they can get into a tarp easy anyway. Just get a cat.
just get a cat to keep them mice away. So that's your three different sort of types of composting that you could... construct your compost heap. Okay.
Was that what you were going to say regards your tools?
Oh, I was just going to do...
literally only got 2 minutes
left. We've only got a few minutes left. I was going to do an inventory of tools that...
Can you do it in...
Can I just quickly say what the tools are and then we'll go, yep, I got that.
Okay.
Now it's tool time. Okay. Tool time. When you're gardening, make sure you might need any of these following. So let's do our checklist.
Okay.
Spade.
Yep.
Fork.
Yes.
Trowel.
Yes.
Watering can.
Yes.
Nawashi.
No.
Okay.
But, okay.
Or
wonder
weeder. Anything to weed with. Tool belt or apron to put your tools on while you're gardening. Pruning saw.
Yep, essential.
Secateurs.
Yes.
Loppers.
Yes.
Wheelbarrow. Shovel or scoop. For your PPE, your personal protective equipment. Gloves.
Yeah. Hat.
Hat. Raincoat. Gumboots.
Earmuffs.
Oh, earmuffs, yes. Glasses or sunglasses.
Yeah.
Long sleeve shirt.
Yeah.
And just a few tips. Make sure if you got tools, you might want to tie ribbon around them or colour them bright orange or something in case you lose them.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And make sure you oil your tools or wipe them clean after you've finished using them so don't let them go all rusty.
I use Pierre's fish bait oil.
Excellent.
It stinks, but it works well.
And keep them sharpened, nothing worse than a blunt tool.
No.
Okay.
Get one of those good sharpeners, those rectangular ones.
And, two other things, kneeling pad and bucket.
Yeah.
Tarp.
Great, Selena. Okay, if you want to check over that checklist, guys, check it out on... Oh, that's a check. Can I say it one more time?
Let's check it.
Czechoslovakia. If you're... you can...
Go on
the podcast and do that there.
Excellent. So, gardeners, now you're all tooled up. Happy gardening. Go out there and get composting.
It stopped raining, so you can get out there. No excuses. Happy composting.
Bye for now.
Bye.
Well, thanks for listening, everyone. That's all we have time for. Come back next week for more great gardening tips at Garden Planet. You can find us on Facebook on our Garden Planet Facebook page, or email us at gardenplanetfm@gmail.com if you want to ask us anything about gardening. Happy gardening, everyone, and we'll be back next week.